This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
And there is an opportunity, I hope, for everyone to pull back, to sit down, to get a halt to what's happening on the ground, and ultimately to produce a ceasefire.
That was U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken on prospects to get a ceasefire in Ethiopia before the situation develops into an all-out civil war. Details coming up. Also, Sudan's main civilian political coalition has rejected any negotiation with the military. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Diplomats from the U.S. African Union and United Nations are staying in close contact as they pursue a ceasefire to end the worsening conflict in Ethiopia, at least temporarily, and provide negotiators time to negotiate a long-term solution.
I believe that all sides see the dangers of perpetuating the conflict.
That was U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken. He says former Nigerian President Olusegun Obasanjo, who is leading the effort on behalf of the African Union, and Jeff Feltman, the U.S. Special Envoy to the Horn of Africa, see a window of opportunity to keep the situation from spinning out of control.
And there is an opportunity, I hope, for everyone to pull back, to sit down, to get a halt to what's happening on the ground, and ultimately to produce a ceasefire, to have access for humanitarian assistance, and over time to negotiate a more durable political resolution.
Blinken said that without at least a truce, a full-out civil war could develop and spread beyond Ethiopia's borders.
And I do think there's an opportunity born of necessity, because the alternative of conflict that overtakes Ethiopia, spills out of the country into the region, should be sobering to everyone and to all concerned. And there is, here as in so many other places, no military resolution to the differences that exist among the different parties.
The conflict that began a year ago in Ethiopia's Tigray region has fostered a worsening humanitarian crisis, with efforts to get food to the hungry blocked. Boeing has reached a settlement with the families of those killed in the 2019 crash of an Ethiopian Airways 737 MAX jet. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn reports.
Boeing has accepted responsibility for Ethiopian Airways Flight 302 losing control and crashing to the ground shortly after takeoff in March of 2019. It was the second crash involving the Boeing 737 MAX jet, which was then grounded because of faulty software. According to court documents, the settlement does not involve monetary compensation to the families of the 157 victims, but it does allow them to pursue individual claims in U.S. courts to streamline the process. Their attorneys call it a significant milestone. I'm Jackie Quinn.
About a dozen students were injured when police say someone set off an explosive device at a university in western Cameroon. No one has claimed responsibility for the attack, but the government blames separatist groups. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé that the government is pleading with frightened students to return to class.
Horace Ngomomanga, the vice chancellor of the University of Boya, says an IED exploded at the school's amphitheater on Wednesday evening. Boya is an English-speaking town in Cameroon's southwest region. Government troops and separatists have been fighting each other in the region since 2017. Manga says about a dozen students were wounded in the explosion.
Somebody we are yet to identify through some device, which is yet to be identified also, on the roof of Amphi 600, and it released some metal particles. So far, we have one male student and 11 female students at the Solidarity Clinic, where they are following up treatment. The students are being carried one by one for x-rays for further investigation into the depth of their injury.
No one has claimed responsibility for the attack, but Cameroon's military blames separatist fighters. The military says that last month, the separatists warned all schools and universities in Boya to seal their doors, but gave no further explanation. On Thursday, less than 2,000 of the 14,000 students enrolled at the university showed up for class. Southwest Region Governor Bernard Okalia-Bilai urged everyone to return, saying the military has been deployed to protect students and staff members. He said education is crucial to the country's future and must be allowed to continue without interruption.
President Propia attaches a lot of importance to education, and therefore we must continue to denounce those who try to disturb the good function of the schools. We must bear in mind that we are dealing with the education of our children, who of course are the leaders of tomorrow. I therefore expect everyone to support the educational sector by denouncing a form of disorder which could disturb the smooth functioning of our schools.
Bilai says students should not be intimidated by the explosion. He said the wounded who were rushed to a hospital in Boya will be treated free of charge. However, some on campus are uneasy after the explosion. Ekani Manga, ICT lecturer at the University of Boya, says the presence of soldiers on campus may have invited fighters to attack the institution. Ekani spoke by telephone from Boya.
There should be coordination amid the ranks of the soldiers, because having people with guns around students is not the best thing.
Separatists in Cameroon have attacked and closed hundreds of schools in recent years, but authorities say this is the first time they have set off an IED at a university. Violence erupted in 2017 in Cameroon's English-speaking regions when teachers and lawyers protested alleged discrimination at the hands of the French-speaking majority. The military reacted with a crackdown, and separatist groups took up weapons, saying they want the Western regions to be an independent country. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Sudan's Forces of Freedom and Change Coalition, which signed the 2019 power-sharing agreement with the military following the ouster of dictator Omar al-Bashir, has rejected the recent takeover and says it will not negotiate with the coup leaders. According to a Reuters report, the coalition supports Prime Minister Abdallah Hamdok, who remains under house arrest and does not accept the return of General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan in the head of state position he held before the takeover. Burhan is under international pressure to reverse his actions. The UN Security Council will be briefed on Sudan at a closed-door meeting today. Nigerian journalists are raising renewed concerns about their safety after an Abuja newspaper reporter went missing last month, and journalists were manhandled while trying to cover two major news events. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
He's always there, sitting in this car, watching the news. He likes news.
Tokwasi Kurun recalls her missing brother, Todwe Salim, as she stares at a picture of him in the family photo book in Abuja. Salim, who has been gone for 23 days now, is a parliamentary reporter with the Vanguard News, an independent Nigerian newspaper. Kurun says she last saw her younger brother the morning of October 13.
He was in front of the gate when I was leaving. So I just waved. Then 2 hours after he left for work, and since then I've not seen him.
The cause of Salem's disappearance is still unclear. The Nigerian police authorities said they have interrogated six people he last contacted that day, but no arrest has been made and no one has claimed responsibility for his disappearance. The issue has raised worries among fellow journalists. Journalists in Nigeria have, on some occasions, been attacked or even detained as a result of their reports. No one could prove Salem's case was work-related, but this week, as the Nigerian Union of Journalists marked the global day to end impunity for crimes against journalists, they urged authorities to take urgent action on the matter. Sonny Daniel is a regional editor at Vanguard News.
We are all humans, and we feel sad. We recognize the horror, the suspense, and the anxiety. It could have happened to anybody.
This year, Nigeria ranked 120th in the World Press Freedom Index, dropping 5 spots from last year's tally. Last month, journalists covering the Nsah's memorial procession on October 20 were manhandled by security agents. Another group of journalists also were harassed and barred from entering an Abuja courtroom where the trial of separatist leader Nnamdi Kanu was held. Nigerian journalist Adefemi Akinsonya was antagonized during the SARS procession at the Lekki tollgate in Lagos State.
I just thought, had they discharged their weapon, even accidentally, would it have been worth it? Press freedom is so important. As I said, it's a hallmark of a free and just society. And that's what we all want for Nigeria, a free and just place.
Nigerian journalists say without better treatment from authorities, the country will become too risky for them to perform their jobs. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
F.W. de Klerk, the last president of South Africa's apartheid regime, has died. A statement from his foundation said he passed away at his home in Fresne, Cape Town, following a battle with a cancer that affects the lining of the lungs. He was 85. Vicky Stark reports.
If W. de Klerk and Nelson Mandela were awarded the Nobel Peace Prize in 1993 in recognition of ending apartheid and bringing about democracy in South Africa. A small media contingent gathered outside de Klerk's house today. A Malawian neighbour of 10 years says the former president would wave when he saw him.
He was very friendly and good. Yeah, he's the one who raised Mandela at that time. Yeah, so I know more about him.
Ahmed Kathrada was also imprisoned with Nelson Mandela, the black revolutionary leader who succeeded de Klerk as president. Now deceased, the executive director of Kathrada's foundation, Nishan Bolton, had this to say about FW.
Firstly, the foundation expresses its condolences to the family, friends, and the foundation of Mr. Depp. This country will always remember and recognize the fact that he played an incredible role in the transition to democracy in this country, whilst acknowledging that he had a role in the apartheid government. Despite that, he played a significant role in the unbanning of the liberation movement and in the process of negotiating to the democracy that we have today. So we recognize that when the moment came, Mr. de Klerk made the right decision that put us onto the road to democracy.
While many on social media are acknowledging the important role de Klerk played in ending South Africa's racist system, many are critical of him, saying security forces under his command have still not been brought to book for the atrocities they committed, something the Truth and Reconciliation Commission was meant to deal with. Others also accuse Mandela of selling out during the negotiations. Here's political commentator Dr. Somadoda Fikeni.
I think it's a lazy way of thinking. If you look at firebrands, even the likes of Mugabe, at the point of the Lancaster House Agreement, Fidel Castro in 1959, and several others, they normally try to strike a reconciliatory tone during transition. And the reason is very simple. Each side doesn't know exactly with precision the scale and the power of the other side. So they are making rational calculations, hoping that they would consolidate on what they get. That at the point of truth and reconciliation, that at the point of implementing constitutional requirements and many other things, those things seem to fade away, is the failure of the subsequent generation of leaders.
De Klerk is survived by his wife, Elita, his children, Jan and Susan, and his grandchildren. His foundation is expected to announce funeral arrangements shortly. This is Vicky Stark for VOA News in Cape Town.
South Africa's national electricity company, Eskom, is desperately trying to turn the lights back after 2 weeks of rolling blackouts. Eskom blames the power outages, which are now lasting up to 14 hours every day in some areas, on equipment breakdowns. It says the blackouts are necessary to ration emergency electricity reserves. Darren Taylor filed this report during the hour that his electricity was on in Johannesburg.
Economists calculate that the South African economy's lost 25 billion rands, about $2 billion, because of power outages in the past 2 weeks.
In 2 months' time, it will be 14 years since the first blackout happened.
For 14 years, says economist Iraj Abedian, South Africans have been hearing government promises to end the country's energy crisis. In that time, the state power company, Eskom, has been plundered by corrupt officials, its power stations paralyzed by lack of maintenance.
That is a massive betrayal of this economy and this society.
Energy analysts say former Eskom CEO Machela Koko was part of former President Jacob Zuma's state capture project to steal billions of dollars from public enterprises. Koko, however, maintains he was one of the best bosses Eskom's ever had.
We executed the most number of maintenance in the history of Eskom. If state capture meant that the Eskom cost came down, if state capture means that Eskom kept the lights on, let it be. I'm happy to be associated with that type of state capture.
Koko blames the crisis on Eskom's current leaders. He's calling for the head of the man who replaced him, Andre de Reiter.
I understand that there are frustrations, that we are not achieving our objectives as quickly as we would have liked to, but these frustrations will not be resolved by changing horses at this point in time or changing jockeys for that matter.
Abedian says the sooner President Cyril Ramaphosa's administration stops focusing on Eskom, the faster the crisis will be solved.
Almost 60% of generation capacity of Eskom should have been retired 10, 15 years ago. So what are we doing throwing money at the broken machinery? If we spend the same money subsidizing firms and households to finance their own energy generation, as many countries have done and are doing as we speak, within 3 to 5 years, we will solve the problem. And Eskom will focus on what it can do, which will be about a third of what it is now obliged to do.
The Economist wants the government to use small, private, independent power producers who use wind, sun and natural gas to generate electricity.
It will cost us less, it will be a lot more efficient and a lot more reliable, but we will cut out a lot of interest groups who are now really coining in because they keep Eskom alive, because it's a broken machine. So,
according to some energy experts, these interest groups are connected to powerful African National Congress or ANC leaders who are therefore resisting the implementation of green energy.
They are confused and they are confusing themselves and they are fighting their battles over energy policy. It's the president and the cabinet ultimately who's got constitutional responsibility to solve this and to stop beating around the bush. If they don't know what to do, they need to come out and say, we don't know what to do. And then business sector, the scientific society will sort it out. But the more they pretend that they have the solution, the more they take us backwards. And they must stop this after 14 years.
Eskom spokesman Sikonadi Manchancha says he's confident the blackouts will end this weekend, but he acknowledges there'll be more to follow. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Mozambique's President Filipe Nyusi has fired his defense and interior ministers. Yesterday, at an address before a military graduation ceremony, the president gave a hint about why he dismissed the two. According to the French news agency AFP, Nyusi questioned the competence of the ministers as the country battles a four-year-old insurgency. He said leaders in the area of defense and security cannot afford to sleep on the job or be distracted, especially during times of war. Militants with links to the Islamic State have in recent years stepped up attacks in Mozambique's Cabo Delgado region, home to blockbuster oil and gas projects worth some $60 billion. Mozambique's military was losing ground to the insurgency until it accepted foreign troops from the Southern Africa Development Community and Rwanda, which together helped the country win back lost ground. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abaro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
The Voice of America's Global News Program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 1705 UTC on The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20.